Thank you. Apologize that our student wasn't able to be here. I've compressed and changed this presentation to reflect why we are so aggressively pursuing biplant nitrogen management at OSU, and so have taken the liberty of using some of our older data and some of the newer data. A lot of it that Kent Martin at Kansas State has been involved in. So whether or not it's Iowa or Oklahoma, we have corn plants that come up late, or they're a little bit behind. Or for whatever reason, once they start to get behind in corn, they're staying behind. And they're never going to catch up. And in this case, that plant is now a weed, as is this plant. They're both weeds. They won't produce any corn. So whether or not it's in Nebraska, Iowa, Oklahoma, doesn't really matter. These are biplant yields of corn expressed on the area that they occupied. So depending on how far away they are, and there are several of these graphs that are identical. And then this is distance on the x-axis and yield on the y. And what you see is that yields range from probably 2,000 kilograms per hectare all the way up to 20,000. So 10x, sometimes 20x differences over 10, 15 meters of row. So extensive variability over short distances. This is very similar, some data that Kent and others collected in Iowa that show that we have these biplant yields that are incredibly different. And so a lot of people say, well, these are genetically homogenous hybrids. They are, but there's a lot of other agronomic variables that can influence that yield. So with the engineers, basically constructed a bike where we could collect NDVI readings every half a centimeter, and this is basically a shaft encoder that was built into that bike where we could measure those differences over short distances. So this is basically what we did in terms of considering those plants. Depending on the formula that you want to use, we basically looked at five plant sequences and then had competition factors amongst those. So without going into a lot of the specifics here in terms of what was developed for this equation, is that we basically wanted this adjustment factor that took into consideration the height of each individual plant and the distance that those plants occupied. And then finally, this is identical to some other data that we've generated, is this NC, is in-season estimated yield, where we want to estimate what that yield is going to be, but on a biplant basis. And that's really tough, because we were relying on NDVI data for corn plants, some of them that overlapped, and then we were using days from planting as a variable in there in terms of that estimate of yield. And so some of the final stuff that Kent was able to put together, and I know that that is not a an inviting R-square of 0.48, or I can't really read from here what that might be, but it's not a high R-square. But the issue is not that, is that the fact that there's a significant slope means that we're on to something. We recognize that this is not ideal, and certainly not something that that we're going to go to the bank with, but we also recognize that there's been progress that's made when we go in there with NDVI data, height data, on a biplant basis, that we can get this type of a relationship was very encouraging. So coming back to the issue of why it is that we're aggressively pursuing biplant end management, is that there's all these variables that influence emergence. So those plants are coming up late, they're coming up different. There are heterogeneous stands, and those heterogeneous stands are everywhere. They're not just in Oklahoma. And that's why we went to great lengths to go up to Ames, Iowa, to go to Shelton, Nebraska, to go to Argentina, to Mexico, and collect that data and report it. Double seed drops, wheel compaction, surface crusting, random clods, soil texture differences, whatever it is. There's tons of variables that contribute to the uneven or heterogeneous emergence of plants. I don't need to talk about it. But so the method is all these different countries. We basically spotted out one row. I think there were 48 transects in all of this work, where we actually went in and measured the distances between those plants, and then measured, in this case, height, and then at the end, of course, final grain yield. What's important about this is that this is reporting over those 48 transects collected across those different locations in the world. Is that as that mean yield went up, the standard deviation about that yield also went up. And this was contrary to some of the dialogue that we listened to that says, well, that as those yields go up in Nebraska, that they're not going to have that kind of variability on a plant-to-plant because they don't have that kind of plant-stand differences. And the answer to that is absolutely not. The standard deviation went up as those yields went up. Now, granted, there's some, depending on what model you choose, that you can get that to go down, but this data out here would suggest otherwise. And so intuitively, then that mean yield, as that mean yield goes up, there should be some expression of that CV going down. As you divide by that larger mean, that CV should actually decrease a little bit as you get into these regions. But it doesn't decrease completely. So again, oh, I forgot, that one was wheat. This is actually going into some of the corn stuff. Same thing, mean yield. But this is the yield range. Those yield ranges were still way out there. So in other words, the variability was still present even though yield levels were higher. And that was very important for us because whether it was Argentina or Nebraska, that granted they did have higher yields, they saw the same thing that we did. This is basically smoothing. So this is the actual data. And then you go in and you say, well, I'm going to average every two plants, or I'm going to average every three plants. And I think this one was over distance. So yeah, this was every two plants, every three plants, every four plants. So even if we average those yield differences over four plants, what's important is we've got 1,300 kilograms per hectare all the way down to 5,000. So 3-4x differences that I can build a sensor, or we have sensors that recognize that variability today. In fact, we're very close to biplant recognition. So that one was biplant, this one is fixed distances, same thing. So again, the importance is the variability is there, we just have to recognize it. Just added statistics that enhance that issue of the take-home message that the average difference from plant to plant that you can expect in corn, and again, this is from all over the world, is one plant will differ from the other by 44 bushels per acre. And if we're then going to close our eyes and put on blinders and say we're going to fertilize those plants with the same rate, I think that we do a disservice to the word precision agriculture. Because if it's going to be precision, then we need to recognize, owe up to the variability that's present and treat it, if we can. And thus far, engineering has always told us that yes, you can sense and fertilize each plant on the go. And that's what we're doing. I think Jake showed one of the applicators that our engineers have built for us. And again, this is research-driven engineering that we've got to feed them before they're going to build that applicator that works at those kinds of levels. Now, granted, some of them have been cost prohibitive. But again, the results in terms of fertilizing based on end demand or our projected yield are impressive. So in summary, those errors that are associated with predicting yield at early growth stages were dwarfed in comparison to the recorded biplant yield differences. Recognizing and treating differences in yield potential based on predicted amounts of nutrient removal could lead to an important improvement in terms of nutrient management, and that's what we do. And we believe that not only is there the need for biplant nutrient management, but that this will carry over into other areas, whether it's fungicides, insecticides, whatever it may be. And it may even be Roundup on the go, that we torch those plants that simply aren't going to deliver with yield, and we can recognize those. And the last one is that over all sites, if there was something that I wanted to communicate to the group in the absence of our student that is not here, is that the plant-to-plant variation averages 44 bushels per acre, average. So in many cases, it's two, three, four times that. That's the average that you can expect. And if it's 44 bushels per acre, you know, for each bushel of N, 44 bushels, that's going to be roughly, in terms of N removal, it's going to be roughly 60 pounds of N per acre. And then you divide by an efficiency factor, the N rate that should have gone down on a biplant basis changes radically. So we are moving aggressively to do that. And with that, I'll take any questions that you might have. I'm definitely not a student. I want to use up. I don't want to use up the time. I want to go sit down. Yes.
Bill, just out of curiosity, how much? I don't know how you would even measure, but how much variation in that biplant variability can be attributed to the closeness or the space between plants versus genetic variability, the G by E variability that we see in all plants?
I think the genetic variability is small, small, small. I think that this kind of variability that we're reporting is due to all of those physical factors and exactly what you said, that one that was closer to the other, or that the delayed emergence. That we agree with the criticism that has come from some that say, well, these are genetically homogeneous hybrids. They are. And they should deliver. If they emerged at the exact same time, they should actually produce about the same yields. It's the delayed emergence and then proximity to one another that exactly create that yield variability.
So you're saying you're going to go down every row and sense every plant and support the rate of nitrogen on every plant?
Absolutely. In fact, we're at a foot and a half right now today, and I think Jake had a picture of that applicator. And again, this is it's agronomic. A research-driven work that goes to the engineers, and they work with us, and they've got to listen to us, and they've got to trust us. But I got to deliver to them data just like this, for them to believe me, and for them to say, "Okay, we can resolve this on the engineering side."
Additional questions?
Would it be cheaper to make a precision planter that gets the spacing right?
The precision planter is also what we're working on. So exactly that we have right now in place with them ideas to build that planter that's going to give us more homogeneous stands. Yes, exactly. And so, yeah, we have to work both sides of that research problem. Good point.
The reason I was asking is that we're doing quite a bit of work with twin row. And one of the things that we found working with twin row in the live row system working with twin row corn is that you fertilize both sides of the plant to keep them from being weeds. You know, you want two rows uniform in size, because if it ever gets off, and it can happen, it doesn't have to happen at this stage. It can happen at the, you know, 2-leaf stage, 10-leaf stage. But once it gets a variation, it never overcomes a variation.
Yeah, that's an excellent point.
One last comment.
I just wondered, if you're trying to automate the system, it looks like you could go in and manually do what you're trying to automate and see what kind of yield response you could get on a large scale basis. Have you done that? And what kind of yield responses have you seen?
We have those studies where, and I that was part of what was supposed to be today's presentation, was where we actually manipulate that and fertilize the N on a biplant basis, but I have to save that for next year, I guess. But
you don't have any data showing that you can actually increase acreage yields by doing this precision?
Yes and no.
All right. Thank you, Bill, for filling in.